And welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with
Snack
Mike
Time.
And Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testor, a writer of
Names and Flavor Text
for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. With
snack
me,
time.
As always, interrupting
snack,
me, as always, is
snack
the
time.
One and only super flavorful master of weens, the art guy, Mr. Vorthos Mike, Mike Linneman.
Snack attack. We're back in it. And I feel like I haven't seen you in like 100 weeks.
Oh my God, dude, I got the flu. And I was literally just stuck to my bed for like a solid week, maybe week and a half.
You don't even have a dog. That sounds terrible.
It was awful. It was awful.
Okay, well, why don't we get you in better spirits by talking some flavor?
Oh,
how does that feel?
I like that. I think that sounds good to me.
Where the best part's the taste. Either Revolt, out fresh. Feels like we do these every like week and a half at this point. But we do our flavor gems. That's our thing. We start every episode off with it. And
I see no problem with this.
I like highlighting flavorful things. It seems great. Today, you know, we're going through our five things. You know, the Vorthos 2015 article, which should be the five faces of Vorthos, and Ant named it the wrong thing. It's fine. But this is how we describe Vorthos in five different aspects. Well, Mark Rosewater called it. Vorthos appreciates the beauty of the game and the aesthetic quality of it, which is fine, but that it's hard for people to follow what that means.
Right.
So Ant wrote an article describing the five different ways people can engage Vorthos. We're going to go through each one for either Revolt and show you some highlights from his background as a writer. My background is not only trained in art, but worked in art multiple times to really give you some more extra insight. So
that's right. And
today,
speaking of art, our first of the five faces of Vorthos is, of course, the artist.
Yep.
And this is an individual who really appreciates the visual aesthetics of magic. And so
okay.
I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to go first. My artist flavor gem from either Revolt is Silk Weaver Elite.
Okay.
The reason that I picked this card is because I'm like 99% sure that the person who wrote this art description is just a huge fan of Attack on Titan.
Okay, why is that?
Like straight up, this contraption that the elf archer is kind of gotten herself, wielding here is supposed to be more or less a play on a spider, right? And if we think about it, she has reach,
yep.
You know, and as we all know, spiders in green have reach. But the way that she's kind of like hurtling through the frame on these silken cords is very reminiscent of the tech that they use in Attack on Titan in order to have high mobility, you know, when they're actually fighting the Titans.
I kind of like that idea. I mean, we're always a fan of whenever you can add another IP in, as long as it's hidden enough that people that don't know it can realize it, instead
right.
of like a giant blizzard sword, which is the new promo sword, which we're not even going to discuss. Because it just looks like another IP so blatantly. Compared to
yes.
a subtle one where people are like, oh my God, and they just lose it about it.
Look, I mean, there's, you know, in this particular set, there's 184 cards, right? And
sure.
so that, what does that mean? It means 184 art descriptions, more or less.
Right.
Of course, there's going to be, you know, reprints, there's going to be lands, whatever. But that's a good estimate, right? Good starting
sure.
point. And for one of those cards to be a wink and a nod at, you know, that particular person's favorite show, I mean, I think that's awesome. I think, you know, it adds a little bit of extra depth to the plane of Kaladesh. You know, I like to imagine that there's a bunch of these elves zipping around like fighting Deer Hulks, you know, or some other comparably large enemy. I don't
thing,
know.
Something that's also massive.
Yeah, why not?
Speaking of references, that this tie into outside IP, I'm actually going the opposite direction. I'm going a self-referential one.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm picking up one of my favorite artists as of late, post-car accident as he got into, Zach Stella. He painted a Maverick Thopterist, which you're like, okay, guy running through Kaladesh. There's, you know, some nice banners in the background. There's Thopters. Why do you care? First of all, you should ask why are Thopters not running into the banners that are all over the buildings because, you know, they flap in the wind. I always wonder about that, but whatever. It references an older card. I talked to him about this, you know, briefly and said, what's up with this? There's a story to this, isn't there? Who's the guy running from? And he's like, oh, it's Aspiring Aeronaut from Origins, painted by William Murai. He's like, that was him as a kid. And, you know, he was just a 1-2. and here's him as an adult, and he's a tutu.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's so clever. You know, and it shows, you know, an aging character, a recurring character that isn't legendary. You know, and they have this theme in Kaladesh where they have these really cool-looking characters that have nothing to do with any storyline significance. They're just kind of there. And there's a lot of them in this set. Most notably, Magali did one with Scrapper Champion. It's like, who is this woman? What is she doing?
Right, right. I feel like every set always has that, right? Like when you have a story that's, especially when you have a story that's focused on a centralized cast of characters, like you're always going to have these other people who are, you know, or other creatures or whatever that were supposed to just kind of be a one-off. And for whatever reason, like the artist just made it extra awesome, or the art description was just spot on. And, you know, like that's
sure, gonna happen. I get that Scrapper Champion, but it's the that character was vertical. You know, Magali painted it as normally as a planeswalker is vertical, staring right at us, the viewers. So you're like, oh, could be that thing. I don't know. But with Thopterist, it's just a dude running. It's just random. There's no importance on it. And yet he could look back and go into an art description or, you know, ask an art director to say, hey, can I do a continuation here? Is that fine? Same stuff, you know, Howard Lyon does, which
right.
Phenomenally done. And it's just painted really well. If you actually look at this up close, we'll have the art high res below. You get to really see a ton of really, really well done details. And I always wonder about walkways. You know, it's a fantasy walkway that he's running on because there's no guardrails. They don't do guardrails in fantasy.
Well, it's funny. I think is funny about the narrative between, you know, this older card from Origins and the one that we have now is that in the older card, he had flying and he made one Thopter. In this version, he no longer has flying and has two Thopters. And you can almost imagine a story where, like, as we often do when we get older, we're more risk adverse. So yeah, maybe he's yeah. like, you know what? I don't really want to be zipping through the air anymore. So I'm going to convert my former Thopter jetpack into just another Thopter. And I'll just run on this super safe guardrail less walkway.
Yeah. You're just like, oh, come on, buddy. And I just like the idea, you know, add an improvise, add this ability that, you know, yeah. he was just this punk kid. Now he's an actual artificer. Like that's a really great thing. Like, you can't have artificer child. That doesn't make sense. Or like artificer, like amateur or apprentice. So really nice nod there. Really, really nice art to see that. And Zach's been killing it lately. People really underappreciate his art. You need to look at it up close to see how nice it is. And he does do some things traditionally. People don't know that. He's not just a digital guy. Up next, Ant, what do we got? It's the writer. What is the writer for Vorthos?
So the writer, they just appreciate the written words that accompany any Magic card. This one is more tailored to just, you know, writing in general, you know, names, flavor text, that sort of thing. Not so much the writing of, you know, say, Magic story. Which
I call dibs on this right away. Dibs, writer on this. I got to choose one of the most adorable things. I got to choose a Gremlins. But I'm not a gremlin itself. It's Cotton the Brights. Not only is the name 3 emoji out of 4 emoji fire flames, but that art is amazingly comical to me. and then the flavor text reinforces what you're actually seeing. You're like, Cotton the Brights, you're like a spotlight, whatever. And then you see, oh, there's two of them. It's a vehicle. It's a car. And then it reinforces this, that the gremlin doesn't see the car. It's almost like a wild.
It's a deer.
It's very deer.
It's very much a deer in the headlights.
Exactly. And
it's kind of the common expression. Yeah.
It freezes, or if it even notices. I mean, usually maybe it's just munching. It's just hungry, getting its num nums, and it just gets smoked by it. And of course,
yeah. I watched a documentary on the deer of like Pennsylvania and like the like upstate New York area, and apparently the light. Someone's going to correct me because I don't know if this is 100% true, but I think it has something to do with like the light overloads the senses in their brain and they just don't know what to do. Like it's just such a bright light and it's confusing and they just freeze. as a like a prey predator prey response. They sure. they just stand there like, oh, maybe they don't see me or something. Like,
it's kind of crazy. But these little derpy creatures, which Steve Belladin created on the concept team, you know, he's just doing his own thing, just trying to eat some ether. He's hungry, and he just got smoked by a car, and I feel bad for him. And just by the name of the card, I get that. Without the name of the card, it's just a soldier. It's just a spotlight. It's just catching the thing.
Right.
But with the name, you're like, oh, Kaladesh, vehicle, car, you deer in the headlight. Like, that's brilliant. That's so simple. It's so simple that it's well done. And, of course, this is also one of the few things that kills – that killed, now that it's banned, Emrakul in Standard, because, you know, it's funny that you could kill Emrakul with a car, which makes me laugh. Because, you know, otherwise you can't, because it's not affected by instant, so it's an aura, right. Which is hilarious. So what do you got for us, Ann?
All right, so I picked Cruel Finality. It's a black instant. I picked this one for its flavor text for two reasons. One being that, you know, in today's kind of flavor text world, when there's so much world building to kind of, you know, talk about, and there's also so much story to cover, it's very rare that we get these like kind of like poetic, abstract types of flavor text lines. And this line of bitter the bite of a demon steel and deep the abyss it opens is one of those lines where, you know, it makes you just kind of step back and think and try to understand what exactly was the writer going for when they wrote something like this. Other reason that I can really appreciate this line of flavor text is that it's also rare that we see something that breaks any known convention that we've seen before in flavor text writing. And this kind of poetic yet not really rhyming kind of staccato style sure. that this writer used is something that I have... in my, you know, memory anyway, have never seen on a Magic card before. And I think it's inspiring to me as a writer to think that, you know, there is space for stuff like this when it works.
Sure.
So, you know, in the future, I'm definitely going to look for more opportunities where, you know, I can put something that's more abstract, something that maybe when you first read it doesn't have exactly the meaning that you need for you to like understand the card or whatever. But when you really start to think about it, it starts to make sense. And you can kind of infer your own meaning from a line like this. And I thought it was really interesting.
I can dig that. I just respect the mustache. The mustache game is so strong. Like, I'm always a fan of a good mustache.
Oh, Kaladesh does have a good mustache.
It does have some pretty good mustache.
It really do.
So one question I have, Cruel Finality.
Right.
How often is this going to be called Cruel Finale with people not thinking about it? And do you think about that when you write flavor text that people you think will mispronounce?
I do, but I only think about it so far as the current standard or what the current standard would be. So okay. If there was another card in standard called Cruel what?
Cruel Finale, like life's cruel finale.
Okay, so let's say there was another card in standard right now called Cruel Finale, right? Or, you know, like something similar to that phonetically, then this name would not be a great submission from a writer's standpoint.
Well, clearly,
I would think that they wouldn't pick it because there's already another card that sounds so similar, right? But if you're looking at like the entire scope of Magic, it's at this point in the game, it's kind of impossible to avoid things like that.
Is it though?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I mean, you're going to eventually, and like, you also have to think like, sure, this name might sound like a different card of the 15,000 cards that we have, but it's a really good name. And so are you going to skip using this name or not use this name and opt out of such a good name just because it sounds very similar to a card that came out in 1994? I would arguably say no. That sure. doesn't make a whole lot of sense, yeah, right?
All right. But so, I mean, like, do you ever do that? Where you look at a deck and say, and obviously this is a limited playable card, sure, but like Fatal or anything close to like some of the kill spells, like I don't know, one of the high level uncommons, Fatal Push.
Yeah.
Say that there was some sort of push in a modern deck, also in black. Do you ever go that deep on it?
So, again, I go as far as the current standard.
So you go standard. You look at standard.
Standard is where I think it makes sense. When you start getting it modern, you could maybe make an argument for.
Sure.
But, you know, when you go further back than that, because you got to remember, like, modern goes all the way back to what? Like,
8th edition.
8th edition, right?
8th edition.
Yeah, Blood Moon. It was a long time ago.
It was a bajillion years ago.
If you're sacrificing a good name just because it sounds similar to another card that exists in 8th edition, arguably, that's not a good idea. Now, to your point, if it's a card that sees a lot of play currently and is known to see a lot of play, like Sensei's Divining Top, right? Sure. I wouldn't name a card even in, like, you know, two sets from now, Sensei's Divining Thopter or Copter or something, like something that was very similar.
Sure.
Because that's a very well-known played card. But again, sure, you can't always plan for that because Grindstone was a terrible card until Painter's Servant came out, and then all of a sudden it's amazing, and it's a masterpiece.
Or
it's worthy of being a masterpiece.
Yeah, so, sure. Or Lion's Eye Diamond, which is reserve lit, and it was like free for like
absolutely.
Years.
So like up until that point, I would have said, yeah, who cares if you name a card like Grindstone, like Grindbone, like it doesn't matter, right? Who cares? Because that card came out so long ago. But now that it's actually a popular used card, I would say, hey, maybe try not to have a name that's super similar to that card.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, all right, fair enough. For those people, you know, that actually play Infect, that, you know, you could see that, unlike Ian. All right, well, moving on from the writer.
I love how you just take, like, little pot shots at people, like, unlike Ian. In case Ian's at home, like, listening to this, and he's just like, oh, man.
He doesn't
Come
listen.
Come on, Mike.
He doesn't listen to the cast. It's fine.
next Everyone up. Everyone else is like, who's Ian? And why doesn't he care about Infect? Who is this monster, Ian? God, Ian.
He won't listen to it. It's fine.
Learn the meta, Ian.
Moving on. Next up, Oracle Ant. What is it?
All right, so the Oracle is anyone who bridges the gap between what exists in the fantasy IP that is Magic and what exists in real life.
I feel like you have some flair for this.
So you know, cosplay. That's easy, right? That's an easy out. Hey, I'm going to dress like Jace. I'm bringing Jace from the game into my real life.
What about me wearing Sock Game?
Sure.
What if I got Sock Game of a Guild?
You want to be like a secret Dimir agent and you got Dimir socks on? Absolutely.
I like that.
You're bringing the game into life.
That's my jam. That's my jam. So I know you get some fire for this. What do you get?
So I picked Gonti's Aether Heart, right?
Yep.
A, because I think it would be really cool if somebody cosplayed Gonti and had the Aether Heart like lit up, like Mel Lee kills it with this like light up 3D printed stuff. This would
for
be
huge.
Excellent
sure.
to exist in real life. But my real reason for why I picked this card is this would make a really good t-shirt. Think tuxedo t-shirt, but
yeah.
Gonti's Aether Heart.
How cool would that be at a GP?
Oh, so good.
Dang. That's such a good idea. Such a good idea.
Imagine that for like the Aether Revolt t-shirt. Like, you know, we had the cool Eldrazi t-shirts.
Sure.
Like Zendikar. Like this, just imagine black t-shirt, because we know that.
Yeah, that's how it do.
Everyone loves black t-shirts. But
yeah.
Black t-shirt, Gonti's Aether Heart, that's it.
Oh.
Done.
Like, no explanation, no
nope,
words,
nothing.
Just that.
You need to ask, hey, that's an interesting t-shirt. What is it? Oh, it's from this game that I play. Can I teach it to you? Well, sure.
Strange
that's
pretty person
sweet. With
that's,
cool t-shirt.
That's pretty legit. I really like that idea. Okay, I can dig that. Our art's cool, too, and Vincent always kills it, per usual. I went totally not that direction at all.
Yeah,
and
I showed you that.
A preview of this, so I've really been liking Jason Rainville's art. It's playful without being over the top. It's almost you got to look for these little nods and comical things he may add to pieces. And I chose Wrangle. I chose Wrangle of just dude opening a box and a gremlin popping out. Like, okay, and the entire card is, you know, you get to control a creature and then. And you only get that turd because once it's out of the box, you don't get it anymore. He's just gone, right?
Right.
Which is, how did he get it in the box? You know, we're going to get there. But I'm looking at this to say, like, what if? What if I got a gremlin costume for one of my wiener dogs and I put him in a box?
Put him in the trash can.
And just show up at, like, a Minneapolis GP with a box and, like, have the wiener dog pop out as a gremlin. Like, it'd be the most ridiculous thing ever. They're like, dude, did he just wrangle? Did that just happen? And I just love that idea that I could literally do this in my home. All I need is goggles and basically a vest. And I'm doing it.
And you're good. You're done.
I'm good. I just done 100%. I mean, just need some, like, they even have four legs. Like, well, I have six legs, but like wiener dogs, I could paint the edges purple. It'd be hilarious.
Yeah, that would
I just love that idea. It's so simple. The art description is just, you're not getting a big creature. You're getting this derpy little thing and made to life. I like it. I'm taking it.
I love the name of this card just because it's so simple yet so spot on, and it can be reprinted in so many different ways. Like, sure. This could easily be a goblin tying up a goat, like hog tying a goat.
Sure.
Or, you know, like, whatever. I mean, you could do so much with the word wrangle that, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing this card reprinted in, like, a commander set or something.
You could reprint this as, like, an elemental trying to wrangle, like, something weird on Lorwyn. Like,
yeah, this can literally be reprinted in any plane. Like, it's awesome. I'm really excited to see it again.
And I think wrangle, I just think animal. You know, it's going to be like some sort of goblin, like, wrestling a goat or just something ridiculous looking. Like, it's just made for whimsy in the future as a plant.
Or super a goblin wrangling a human.
Yeah, like, I'm making the attempt, and it's just, it's not going to work out for
or
very
a minotaur.
Long.
Minotaurs always get, like, hit by stuff.
They really do. They do, yeah. They do,
Minotaurs and drakes.
Drakes get hit by bolts. They always get hit by lightning bolts or things in the sky every time. Poor guys. Moving on, I got all episodes 30 minutes or less. The Dreamer Ant.
Yes.
What is that?
The Dreamer is the individual who cares about the storyline. So any aspect of a card that influences either A, the ongoing story of Magic, or B, the storyline behind the worlds of Magic. So, for example, world building.
Sure.
That's a dreamer, right? So, for example, I'll go first. I picked the card Ice Over, right? So, one thing that we know about Kaladesh for the most part is people love artifacts and they love inventing stuff, right? We also know that Kaladesh has a native pyromancy and or fire magic potential to it, right? Because Chandra is from Kaladesh and wields fire magic. We can safely assume that there's probably at least one other pyromancer somewhere floating around Kaladesh somewhere, right?
Sure.
The card Ice Over is very different when you compare it to every other card that we've seen so far on Kaladesh in that it doesn't so much look like an effect that's being driven by some type of an invention. You could maybe make the argument that it's coming out of the glove and maybe it's some kind of cryo juice or something, like some kind of freezing liquid. But if you really look closely at the hand, it looks almost like ice magic. And I feel like this might be a hint, one of those little wink and nods that creative loves to do, that says, hey, on the plane where there's definitely fire magic, there may also be ice magic. And I think that might be a really cool little tie-in that could bring us back to Kaladesh in the future, where maybe we see, I don't know, a cryomancer from Kaladesh or something like that.
Well, that'd be pretty cool.
So
I dig that.
That's something to look out for, you know. Fans of the storyline, maybe in 10 years we'll see it. Who knows?
No, I get that. I went subtle on this. I looked at it to say, well, there's two cards that fit into one. It's a panorama, and it's Chandra's Revolution and Pia's Revolution. And obviously it's super Soviet propaganda art. I mean, they even have a hammer in one of them, for cripe's sake. But the
fire is shaped like a sickle.
Yeah. Like, I was just like, come on, buddy. But the cool thing about this connective thing is that by using art to tell a story. Panoramas aren't done that often. That's more than one panel connected, and you chop them up and make multiple artworks. By having this mother-daughter split card, it tells you a narrative that it's not just Chandra's set. It's her family's set. It's her and her mother, and they're both intertwined into this together. Just by card art. I mean, you don't need to read a story. You don't need to get the art book. You just by having these two cards next to each other, you're like, oh, these are connected. Right?
Yeah.
There's something going on here. I mean, anybody picking up like an intro deck can be like, oh, or a Planeswalker deck, as they have them now, and seeing her mom's fighting something larger. And then as you read more, you're like, oh, a consulate. That's probably that. That's like the government or something, right? And with Chandra's, it's like, okay, she's angry on a personal level. In comparison. And that's right. A really cool way to say, like, this is the whole narrative on two cards that connect to each other. And you can tell they're related because they're both wearing the same goggles. That because become, like, that's Chandra's thing, the goggles. And, you know, we thought it tied back to Jaya Ballard's goggles. But since Pyromancer's goggles exist, it's actually, like, her family's thing. Her clan's thing to wear these goggles together. And it's one of the few depictions of Chandra in goggles.
Right.
When she's fighting with her mom. Like, that's such a cool family concept. Moment. Yeah. You just never see that. And that's the whole set. Literally two cards.
What I thought was really interesting here, there's a couple things going on here. One being that one of these cards is a story moment and the other one isn't. So we know that every set has, you know, the five story beat cards, right?
And story spotlights, yes.
This was a very creative way to sneak in a sixth. Because the cards are combined by the art in the panorama. They have similar names. Like, it's a very easy way to kind of, like, get in another, oh, now we have six story cards, you know, without having six. The other thing that I found to be really interesting is the fact that Chandra's mom's card is the story card, where Chandra's is not. You wouldn't, like, if you would have asked me to pick which one is a story card and which wasn't, I would have just assumed that, you know, Chandra being part of the Gatewatch, that her card was the story card. But it's interesting that it isn't. Well, and when you look at the flavor text, it kind of explains to you, you know, why. In that, you know, Chandra's whole thing is, you know, she's upset because she was wronged, right? And she's just lashing out because she was wronged. That's her basis.
Yep.
But her mom is lashing out in the sense of having a revolution because of the bigger picture, because she wants to institute real lasting change. And I think that that's important for someone to kind of compare the two, see the older, wiser person not so much being selfish and getting revenge for their own means, but being selfless and trying to instill change. And, you know, that's an important message, and I think that that's really what they're trying to get across in these two cards.
I can dig it. Cheater. All righty. up finally, before we hit a few honorable mentions, the gamer. This is the most obvious one of the bunch. Yeah. And
the gamer is kind of like how people traditionally thought of the Vorthos identity, in that it's people who like flavorful mechanics, right? Mechanics that when you're playing the card, you get to live a story moment, or when you're playing the card, you get to live and experience the narrative and the flavor, that sort of thing.
Basically, the theme deck, if you will.
Yes.
Is the easy way to say it. I'll take this one out, sure. I picked a Consulate Crackdown, mainly because it's a commander card. It's a commander staple. And I like this idea of the flavor text working into saying the workshops are silent, our creations have been seized, they've been killed, what makes us alive. It basically stops everything in play for artifacts. And in commander, you tend to have a lot of artifacts out. So it's this way to not only very powerfully shut down another player that's maybe advanced a little too quickly in Commander, you know, this social contract that you have, but it also shows that you can have a governmental deck, a taxes deck, a death and taxes situation, and you have a different way to do that in this odd enchantment that comes into play, almost like you're playing Puerto Rico or San Juan, and you know, you're like, oh, I have the market, or I have the barracks now, or I have the government added into play, and it gives me these benefits. And you know, right. once it's there, it doesn't do anything. But when you institute it like actual government, a lot of things happen, you know, good and bad. But it really helps turn the tide if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a revolutionary, it's terrible.
This card is the Kaladesh story in a single card.
Yeah, in a single card, yeah.
Just for purely the simple reason that when you play it, you're opting to play the role of the consulate, right? Let's say you are playing commander, and at the table, every player has, on average, two artifacts, right? You throw down the consulate crackdown, and you take on the role of the consulate, exiling every other player's artifacts. What are they going to do? They're going to revolt against you and do everything that they can to remove your corrupt government from play, because the second that they do, they get all of their toys back.
Well.
And so you're forcing the rest of your table to play the side of the rebels, and you're literally living the Kaladesh story in this single card.
For like a turn, because they're going to blow it up
for
in a
like
second.
For like a turn, but it's a beautiful turn.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's like a turn. And then people will kill it right away. Unless you have one guy that has way too many. And, you know, they're just, everyone's like, yeah, that's fine.
Right.
And Jim's a terrible human.
It, right.
Yeah, he's a terrible human. Whatever. Fair. I like the art, too. Jonas Dayrow's really been knocking it on the park. It's good usage of strong lighting. And you went the obvious route.
Yeah, super
easy.
But I did Oath of Ajani. The only reason that I picked this card is because, you know, the oath cycle that we had was the Central Gatewatch, right? It was the five colors, whatever. But one of my concerns, I loved that cycle, and one of my concerns was that, you know, maybe we wouldn't get to see the oaths for other planeswalkers who inevitably joined the Gatewatch. And this put all of my fears to rest, and I was very happy to see Ajani make his oath, because to me that blows the doors wide open in that moving forward, any other time we see a planeswalker who actively joins the Gatewatch, there's a chance that we will also get to have their oath. And I just think it's nice in a game where there's 15,000 collectibles that you can have mini collectible subsets. And just this simple idea that if, like, you're a huge fan of the story, you could collect A, all the planeswalkers of the Gatewatch, and B, all of their oaths. Like, I think that's awesome. And I really hope that Magic continues to put out these oaths every time we get an additional member. It's the Avengers. Like, who doesn't like a super team?
I hope they have one when they leave, too. That'd be great.
Oh, Mike.
Can you imagine that if, like, Liliana had one, like, peace out, homie, or, like, oath?
What's the opposite of the oath? Liliana's betrayal.
Yeah, like the breaking of the oath or something. I'm not good with the words. I'd be good at pictures with it, but, like, that sort of idea.
When you play it, it would have to say, like, if you control an oath of Liliana, sacrifice it. Ugh.
Can you imagine?
Oh my God, be still my heart. Oh,
like, the thing would never happen, but. You know, if you have a planeswalker in place, something could occur
that. God. The narrative designer in me is just glowing right now.
Because that's like future things that they probably are thinking about to say, like, how do you, or have like a new oath or a re-up
and
when someone comes back.
If anything, that speaks the true narrative of the game of Magic more than anything else, because the number one golden rule of Magic the Gathering is that you break all the rules. And what are these oaths? But they're rules. Enchantments are, by definition, rules that you are layering over top of the game. And to actively break one would feel so good. Oh, God, that needs to happen. I'm gonna write a petition.
Petition, Doug. You're like, listen.
it's too good.
We need this, fam. All right, so that's the five faces, obviously. We only have a couple extra minutes. Honorable mentions. I have one. Ant has like 30.
I have one cycle.
Okay, what's the cycle?
Okay, this coming from the dude who, like, of all of your flavor gems, half of them have gremlins in them.
Because gremlins are awesome.
What the heck?
It's true. They're really
anyway, cool. So my honorable mention real quick is the expertise cycle. I love the fact that, A, it tied to the legends of the set, and B, like, it's nice seeing, you know, a change of pace every once in a while. Like I like the fact that in either Revolt, like, there's this kind of, like, background story going on that's helping to further the Gatewatch story, but it's also kind of its own thing in that it's highlighting these different personalities of the plane that we're visiting. Because, you know, at its core, Magic is a game about exploration. And while, yes, I want to follow the Gatewatch around and see what they're up to as they explore these different planes, I also want to explore the plane for myself.
Okay,
and being able
that.
To get to know these five different people, not only through their cards, but through what their expertise is. I thought it was a really interesting and unique cycle. And I hope to see more of that.
Well, I like to see more expertises. I mean, free spells, turns out, are good, weird.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're also very good.
They're all. I mean, if they were really, if it was a terrible cycle, you'd be like, yeah, that's fine. It would feel like those Planeswalker spells. Remember the named ones?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, those are okay. It seems like this is like the next iteration of those, except they didn't do them with Planeswalkers, which I think was smart.
Right.
I think just like keeping the legendaries, especially the legendary derpy ones that you're like, oh, it's just some random person.
Yeah, because when are you ever going to put these people in the spotlight other than right now? It's exactly like when in Magic Origins they had the five legends that went along with the origin planeswalkers. Yep. Like, that was really cool. You know, we got to have a spotlight on these characters that, like, if you're going to do it, now's the time.
Yeah, I get that. I chose another gremlin as an honorable mention, obviously. It's not a gremlin per se, but it's just a guy holding a gremlin. Yakub Kaspar made an audacious infiltrator. He painted it. You know, it's just a dwarf rogue, 3-1. Unblockable to artifact creatures, fine. But the art is just so freaking funny. Like, he doesn't have evasion. He's not hiding in the shadows. What is he doing? He's literally holding the thing that destroys artifact in a jar.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll do it. I'll drop this gremlin.
Like, it's like with all the scared, like, construct hands out, like, one mustache game strong again. Strong mustache, love it.
If this was an anime, the dude would smash that gremlin on the ground and then it would just, like, take a nap and look all cute.
Yeah,
like,
probably
it wouldn't even do anything.
Probably shake that out right away. But it's just a nice artwork to show this fun thing in limited. Because otherwise you're never going to play this card. Like, unless you really need it in standard and there's a lot of artifact decks, but probably not. It is an interesting piece that 3-1 against Affinity and Modern is really, really good. Like, it's an unblockable 2-drop 3-1. Like, that's not terrible. It's not great.
But
if there's a dwarf deck that eventually emerges, especially a rogue deck, I noticed that. This could be decent in a sideboard. But it's just so funny. It's so funny to me that this joke of an animal in this set, the Rust Monster, because it's a Rust Monster from Dungeons & Dragons. It's exactly what it is.
Right.
Became this fun, playful, Tumblr-loving thing, and then it's in the art descriptions. It's almost like the first wave of Kaladesh. They realize how funny this freaking thing is, and they're like, okay, we got to put this thing everywhere. We're going to make Wrangle. We got to make dudes holding the things. Like, that's funny. And more seemingly is that dwarves and humans can just catch these things. You know, like, the constructs can't keep them under control, but humans are like, yeah, we don't really care. They kind of do whatever. They're like weird stray dogs, artifact dogs.
Like snoots. Dogs.
They're just artifact dogs. Like, some people got them at home. Like, if you don't have any either in their house, it's just an artifact dog. That's all it is.
Right.
It's just a dog. So I thought it was fun. It adds the whimsy to the story, and I want people to notice those cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's good world building. Like, you have to imagine that, like, okay, these things exist. In Kaladesh, these gremlins exist. So, like, how would people make use of gremlins? I don't know, put them in a jar or throw them at some constructs? Like, yeah,
yeah, that's probably about right. And this thing probably hangs out with him at home, and they, like, kick it, he pets it, like, I don't know, like,
he's actually the mastermind and this human is just his puppet.
Yeah, right, the whole time. but I like postulating about those. I like thinking about those sort of things, because it's such simple, clean and easy story world building that you don't need to reinvent the wheel to do. You're like, well, we already have this thing that kills them. How can we use that in different weird ways? Well, right. Let's give it to a human, and then what would the human do? Oh, well, it would probably use it as like a alligator in your hand and like kill things with it or something. Like, well, let's put it in a jar. Perfect. Done.
Yeah. I mean, this makes me want in like some supplemental commander set to have an artifact equipment that is a gremlin in a jar, and it just makes whatever the creature that's equipped unable to be blocked by artifacts.
It's like hot soup, except, right. You know, you yeah, hold the thing. Exactly. It's exactly like hot soup. So that's all we got today. Thanks so much for watching. Ant, where can people find you if they get follow-up things or they want to yell at you about your choices?
So if they want to yell at me, they can hit me up on Twitter at AntTessitor, or they can go to my website at AntTessitor.com. And then that's where all my contact.
Yeah, that's literally where the only two places you're at right now. Because yes. You've been busy. You've been flavor text
I've been
writing.
So busy. Yeah. And sick.
And ill. So for people that don't know, when Ant disappears for like a week or two or three, he's usually writing on a flavor text set.
Correct.
Now you can't always correlate less tweeting to doing that, but nine
I
times
do it on
out of
purpose,
10,
though, because yeah. I'm afraid that I might accidentally talk about something that I'm not supposed to talk about.
Sure.
So because it's so fresh in my mind, sure. You know, like I'm sitting there working on a set and I see somebody make a comment on Twitter and I want to be like, oh no, you don't have to worry about that because it gets resolved. But then I'm like, no, shut up.
So you know that's
I purposefully quiet. Avoid it.
So quiet things have been happening through him, working on some sets. Yeah. I've been working on the art show for Vegas, which is still very much coming. We were getting some submissions in, which is great. If we have any of our Patreon supporters coming to that, rest assured we have a something to make up for lost time coming in the mail. And as well as at GP Vegas. I hope to see everybody there. The art show is going to be amazing. We're going to have some events with it, which aren't listed yet. And we're going to do some vintage artists constructed. So there's going to be some flavorful formats there. And to find out about those news, you can always get a hold of me at Worthless Mike online or just Googling my name and attempting to spell my last name. There are four N's, though. But thanks for coming today. Thanks for watching. And we'll be back next week.